welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Team Power.
Look at you, like, cut me off at the pass.
Look at you just ruined it. I'm not going to say it now.
That's the part where you just look at me and don't talk.
Yeah.
Except you forgot.
So Team Power is our sponsor this hour. They're the local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer. And you can find them at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Just paralleling I-5 up there, just south of Phil's Propeller.
Well, they have a big new sign, too, so if you're driving on the freeway,
take a gander at that.
Yeah,
go up there at night. We just put a new sign up. That thing will blow your socks off. Their phone number up there is 226-9226, and they can do tractor repairs. They can set you up with a new tractor. Every once in a while, we get used tractors in there, but they are very scarce.
Lots of mowers.
Yeah, we do it all. And
RTVs.
Yeah, go online at readingtractors.com.
We'll drive by and peer through the fence on Sunday.
Yeah, and yeah, that's okay. So, readingtractors.com, and there's lots of models and pricing and financing and all that stuff on that site. So go see them, and it's Team Power. So I'll hand it back over to Miss.
This is helpful.
Interrupt me a lot over here. Yeah, thank you for all the help.
I was just adding
really
little things in the background.
Yeah, you're so helpful. What would I do without you?
I don't know. You'd be lost.
I know.
You'd be sitting in a hotel room by yourself.
Yeah.
Waiting for your air conditioner to get fixed. Mm-hmm. At least you have company.
Yeah.
You can thank me for that.
Mm-hmm.
Lord knows I'm entertaining. All right.
Yeah.
Hey, it's not for everyone. Didn't you listen to the disclaimer?
That's right. And by the way, we're not for entertainment purposes only.
Yeah, it's for education purposes with a little bit of foolishness.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. So, back to our guest. This hour is a continuation, obviously, of multiple shows that we have done. Our guest, Harry Buyens, is an internationally recognized, multiple award-winning PhD defense and aerospace physicist. He's originally from South Africa with a 360-year bloodline from that country, and he lives with his family on the forested slopes outside of Vancouver, Canada. And so we have him Skyped in today, and we've also listed the previous programs that we have done with him, and I hope you will go back and take a listen. You can find all of that at wethepeopleradio.us.
Yeah.
In addition to our contact information and sponsorship information and all that good stuff. And so if you have ideas or suggestions or things you'd like to hear about or, topics or guests, please email or call us.
And what kind of instigated this whole thing was our previous president, Barack Hussein Obama's speech in South Africa. Was it last week?
And yes, Tuesday.
The first hour we talked about his connections and family history, and now we're going to elaborate.
Talk a little bit more about what he said.
Yes.
It's very telling, and it's things that a lot of Americans always thought, but I don't know, if you talked about it, you were a hater, and it's interesting, but a lot of that is coming out now. So we'll shut up, get back to our Skype guest, Dr. Harry Buyens.
All righty.
No pressure.
I've explained the map of Africa, that South Africa is stuck at the bottom end, not to be confused with Kenya, who's in the north, and to the very nice gentleman who asked me the question the other night in Spokane. Indeed, Africa has many different countries, and I could only be held accountable for one out of about 50, and that would be the one stuck far in the south. We've talked about Kenya and some of the history there. Perhaps what I should do is jump forward immediately to the speech and pull out a couple of things from the speech and then go back from there to qualify those or explain those. So I wrote you an email in which I said, what did I tell you? Mm-hmm. Today, Obama delivered the annual Mandela speech. Now, the reason why I prefaced it with what did I tell you is because I have maintained from day one, from 2008, that Obama is inspired by Mandela. He's all about Mandela. He's all about Africa. He's not about America. Okay? He's about Africa. And I shouldn't say he's not about America. I'm saying his inspiration is Africa. His inspiration is not Martin Luther King. You guys need to understand that. His inspiration is people like Jomo Kenyatta and Nelson Mandela.
Because he knows that history.
And he knows that history.
Yeah.
It's his family's history.
Mm-hmm.
He went there and he wallowed in it.
Right.
Literally, he went there, he dug through his grandfather's paperwork, he looked at his grandfather's passbook that the British issued him. He lamented about the fact that his grandfather had fought for the British in Burma and had come back and had been treated like a dog, which is probably true. Okay. He talked about how it even listed the missing teeth his grandfather had. What he did neglect, though, is to mention that Luo tribesmen, as their initiation process, have their six of their front bottom teeth removed anyway. So I don't know if that's what the passbook referred to. But we won't get into that kind of detail.
The point is he grew up in that culture. He knows that political system and culture
and
very
for all
well.
The people who think that Nelson Mandela was a great guy, you might want to listen to some of the previous programs.
Here's the bit that folks need to get about their previous president. He was born in Hawaii. I think you'll forgive me, and the people of Hawaii will forgive me if I say they're not exactly representative of Kansas, Nebraska, or West Virginia, or Montana. Okay. Hawaii is not exactly fly-over country. It's fly-to country.
Yeah.
And so after that, he ended up in Indonesia, which is, again, not exactly Ohio. Okay? And then eventually he came back to California, which is on the loony left end of the country.
Don't we know it?
And I don't have to tell you anything about that. You know the calibration over there. And he ended up at Occidental College in I think that's in L.A. And here is how he phrased it in his speech the other day in South Africa. Now, it's significant that he would be invited to give the Mandela speech because people in Africa know he's inspired by that. They don't have confusion. It's Americans who have the confusion. You voted for him for president. And I bet you that of the 330 million people in the United States, if 1,000 had this background, it would be many. But they voted for him. He wrote, or he stated, this is the recording by, what's it called, National Public Radio. This is the actual transcript. He stated, "Madiba's light shone so brightly even from that narrow Robben Island cell that in the late 1970s he could inspire a young college student on the other side of the world to re-examine his own priorities." Let it be known that this is before he went to Africa to find his father's roots. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then he said, when later as a law student I witnessed Madiba emerge from prison just a few months, you'll recall, after the fall of the Berlin Wall. There's actually a connection. The Berlin Wall fell, and that's why South Africa decided Mandela could go free. I felt the same wave of hope that washed through hearts all around the world. Didn't wash through mine. Anyway.
with one exception.
One exception, apparently. 4.5 million exceptions where I come from. And elsewhere in the same thing, he said, and this gives you his calibration on events. Let me do it this way. How would you guys tell me what really was World War One about? Where was it mostly fought, and where was most of the dying done? I think you'd agree with me that would be Europe. Probably like, you know, Poppy Day and the fields of Flanders and Poland and
France,
all quiet on the Western Front. Mm-hmm. Unless, you know, there may be someone out there who doesn't know, but it was kind of, sort of, the Germans in the middle fighting largely the French, Germans, and later Americans and some Canadians and South Africans and so forth. The South Africans did serious dying in that war, okay, in the middle of the Battle of the Somme. In one battle, one-third of our guys came out alive.
Holy cow.
Exactly.
I did not know that.
The Battle of Delville Wood is heavily commemorated, and the South Africans went in there and they were slaughtered by the Germans. One third of them came out alive out of that forest. The forest was gone. My grandfather did fight in the bit of the war that Obama wants to talk about. Here's what Obama thought the First World War was about. He says in his speech, "Most of Africa, including my father's homeland," he's talking about Kenya, "was under colonial rule. The dominant European powers, having ended a horrific world war just a few months after Madiba's birth, viewed this continent and its people primarily as spoils in a contest for territory and abundant natural resources and cheap labor, and the inferiority of the black race and indifference toward black culture and interests and aspirations was a given." In other words, okay, so the First World War, in his view, was about the natural resources of Africa?
Yeah, that's so far left field.
Can you even revise history to get there?
No.
You just have to make stuff up. So let's let that soak in. We have to have a little break to celebrate capitalism here, and we'll be right back with our guest, Harry Bullions. We're chatting about South Africa today.
Yeah, I got to find out why we fought the First World War. I thought it was about something else.
Nope, it's about Africa.
About Africa.
Cher time traveled and wrote a song about Barack Obama's speech on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. All right,
Harry, pick it up. We were
before we digress. Again.
The man is amazing. He is a historian all by himself. The First World War was all about his grandfather and Kenya. Who knew?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Surprise.
Flipped the whole world on its ear because of Africa. Yep.
Yeah. Now, I come from Africa, and I have some sort of vested interest in the truth down there, but I didn't think it was quite necessary to rewrite the entire First World War. He's presumably going to get to the Second World War in the next one.
That's next year's Mandela speech.
Harry, there's a lot more going on in Africa than you have any idea, and we're finding out about it now.
It shows you what you can achieve in life by being a community organizer and having a booming voice.
Exactly.
Anyway... So, you know, later on in that speech, he gets to another kind of subject, which we haven't really touched, but he says about what Mandela did for white people in South Africa. He says, the subjugator, that's now me, was being offered a gift, being given a chance to see a new way, being given a chance to participate in the work of building a better world. And so... Let's see. So that is why his government created black economic empowerment legislation that cuts whites out of everything in life. That's why the farmers are being killed. Is that how we are being given a better chance to participate in the work of building a better world? Is it a better world when you end up like the people in those images or farm murders?
Mm-hmm.
What is this man talking about? Will somebody, somewhere, please tell me?
Yeah, where was their voice when all that was going on? They didn't have any say in this new Mandela government. They didn't.
Okay.
They were being completely isolated and exterminated.
So now I want to read you a little thing that he said in Kenya. I think it was in 2015. He visited there a couple of times. Let me explain it this way. Before he became president, he visited there once, and I believe it was in the 1990s. That's when he rummaged through his grandfather's stuff. That's when he went and found his roots, so to speak. Okay? But that was predated by being inspired by Nelson Mandela. So here's this kid who grows up in Hawaii and Indonesia and then ends up in California. He's at the most impressionable age, just coming out of school. He wants to do all the good in the world. And what does he do? He hears about Nelson Mandela, and the first speech he ever gives in public is at Occidental College, and it's about sanctions against South Africa. So the guy you elected to president, his first ever public speech was about South Africa, just so you know.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Okay?
Interesting.
But back in Hawaii, his childhood friend would later say, and I think, where is that? I think that is in USA Today of 6 December 2013. This friend of his said, Keith Kakugawa, said about Obama, he made everything out like it was racial.
Wow.
Made everything out like it was racial.
Which explains the state of things now.
So I wrote to you, Aaron, and it's worth repeating. He may well have been physically born in Hawaii on 4 August 1961, but his formative post-teen birth was based on events in South Africa. After finishing school in the late 1970s, he was inspired while at Occidental College by Mandela, and in his own words, inspired to re-examine his own priorities. Okay? And he said that at the speech the other day in South Africa. He was inspired by Mandela to re-examine his own priorities. Now, by contrast, at the exact same time, I was inspired by a visiting American Democrat who was a wonderful ambassador for his country, okay? And George is a personal friend, family friend to this day. He's the longest-standing friend of my life, and I view him as my mentor. And we fight all the time about Republicans and Democrats, and George is a devout Democrat, okay? But he couldn't see his way open to support Hillary in the end.
There's hope.
There's a lot of that going around.
Well, I don't know how he voted, but I'd better not repeat what he said about Hillary. So it's over that period that Obama changed his name from Barry to Barack. And for those interested, really, they can just go to Google and put in, quote, Barry to Barack, unquote. Just stick that into Google and see what you get. It's a fantastic article, very well researched. Okay, not by me. Other people do good work. And in 27 June 2013, in Senegal in Africa, he said that his, quote, first act of political activism was because I was inspired by what was taking place in South Africa. USA Today, 6 December 2013. In his first presidential visit to Kenya, he said about his first original visit. In other words, it's now later in 2013, and he's talking about his first visit to Kenya in the 1990s. And he said he got to the airport, and some lady looked at him and then told him, are you perhaps related to Barack Obama? So she mentioned his father's name. And he said, this was the first time that his name had meant something.
Hmm.
Think about that. That was the first time that his name had meant something. So here's this kid. He's got a white mother. He's got a black father he's hardly ever seen. He's in Hawaii. Then he goes to Indonesia, both, as you can see, great preparation for flyover country. Sorry for my sarcasm. I keep getting told don't ever do that with Americans.
We like sarcasm.
We live on sarcasm and irony in South Africa. You have to. All the garbage happens to you, you develop irony and sarcasm in your humor.
Well, we live in California, so it's a staple for us as well.
Okay, here you go. So, finally, he decides, hang on, I've heard this Mandela guy in South Africa. This speaks to me in a way that nothing's ever spoken to me. And then in 1990s, he flies out to Kenya. He goes and does his Arthur Haley Roots thing. Okay, that book was rubbish, by the way. We can make that the subject of another time. But the first time I opened the first couple of pages, I laughed my head off and threw it down. Maybe it's got something to do with being born in Africa. You just look at life.
You can spot a fiction when you see one.
I can spot a fiction in a BS story a million miles away. It just annoys me that I have to live through it. He finally goes to Kenya, and on landing at the airport, for the first time, his name means something. You put all of that together, this is a man who fundamentally feels validated by Africa.
Yeah.
No good talking to him about West Virginia and coal mines. You got me?
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's a great point.
No solidarity with the actual American citizen.
Yeah, you don't
we
have
felt
to.
That.
Don't bother speaking to him about farmers' land rights in Nevada or Montana, for that matter.
Yeah, okay. True.
He doesn't relate. His concept of America is Occidental College and community leadership in Chicago. Okay?
And Mandela, that, I just was looking at your link to Mandela singing Kill the Whites. Well, there's another terrific role model.
So my problem is that he's inspired by a guy at that time about whom I'm not sure that there is another human being on earth about whom so many lies have been perpetrated with such effect and efficiency. I have never come across anything like this in my life. So let us just, because I've never done this with you, let me just give you a couple of quotes here from Mandela's own book.
All right, hold that thought. Let's not break this up. I want to have that all in one thing. Take a really quick break. We're going to come back.
Okay.
Because people do need to know who Mandela was. They're still, besides the fact they don't know Africa has countries, I mean, they think Mandela was a great guy. So
yeah,
he wasn't great for his own people.
There are many
people,
great Africans, but Mandela's not one of them.
Yeah, he wasn't one of them. Exactly. Our guest is Harry Bouyans. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Find little pink houses in all 57 states.
Said Barack Obama.
Said Barack Obama.
All right, back to Nelson Mandela.
Okay, so the reason we're on Nelson Mandela is because we have now determined, in Obama's own words, repeatedly, that he was inspired by Nelson Mandela. The sequence of events is that here's this kid of a somewhat confused upbringing, having been fatherless for most of the time. He'd gone from Hawaii to Indonesia and then to the coast of California, at L.A., at Occidental College. And finally, there is a light that he picks up somewhere in his own personal darkness, and that light is Mandela. And that he is much inspired by. He then goes to Kenya, where he goes and digs for his roots, finds his grandfather's struggles with the British, etc. Now he is a man truly wallowing in African colonial history and the freedom from colonialism and all that kind of stuff. For Americans at the time, the only thing they knew about it was, what was it, Commander Uhura on Star Trek? That was about the only effect of Uhuru, which is the word freedom in Swahili.
Oh.
Okay, so that's why it was chosen.
I did not know that.
Okay, so there you go. You learned something useful today. Okay. So America's experience of all of this bloodshed and stuff that everybody else is struggling with and dying by the thousands is the naming of a fictitious character in a TV series.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, at that time, Mandela, I mean, what we were being fed was that Mandela was a freedom fighter who was imprisoned by South Africa and...
totally unfairly. He had done absolutely nothing.
Oh, yeah. And they had to let him go because of apartheid, you know, was bad. And he really had all the answers, and he came out a hero.
Yeah. Yeah, apartheid was bad. But it's also the period over which the economy grew terrifically and black people made the greatest economic advances. But one's not allowed to say that because facts are not allowed to intrude while we're wallowing in that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's go. Instead of asking all kinds of people what they think of Mandela, why don't people read his book? I stood at that conference in Spokane the other day, and I held up Mandela's book in my left hand, and I held up my own in my right hand. And if folks read the little blog article that Aaron has posted, they will understand the context of all of it. That was the moment that I held up the two books, and I said, in the inimitable words of your president, mine is bigger.
God love him.
Anyway, so and that got their attention. The fact is, I'd actually read the book, and I think most people that I know who want to wallow in this self-assumed air of wonderment that they have around Mandela, they probably have a copy of the book which they framed somewhere, and they pointed out to their liberal friends. I wonder if anyone's read it. Because if they were to read it, they would find on page 320 to 324, he describes, he says, the Communist Party had secretly reconstituted itself underground and was now considering forming its own military wing. We decided, that's now the ANC, his party, we decided I should raise the issue of the armed struggle with the working committee. And I did so in a meeting of June 61. I was raising the issue of violence so soon after the treason trial, where we had contended that for the ANC, nonviolence was the inviolate principle, not a tactic to be changed when conditions warranted. I myself, now in other words, the ANC defended itself in court by saying it's a nonviolent organization. Then he says, I myself believe precisely the opposite, that nonviolence was a tactic that should be abandoned when it no longer worked. At the meeting, I argued that the state had given us no alternative to violence. The chief, this is Albert Luthuli, who was about to receive the Nobel Peace Prize, I'll have you know, initially resisted my arguments. For him, nonviolence was not simply a tactic. But we worked on him the whole night, and he ultimately agreed that a military campaign was inevitable. After that, Luthuli got the Nobel Prize. Now, those last words are mine, not Mandela's. I want to be careful about that. So then we can go further down on the same page, 323. Towards dawn, there was a resolution. The Congress authorized me to go ahead and form a new military organization separate from the ANC, to which I, Harry, would respond, sure, but they were all members of both organizations, for crying out loud.
Sure.
Page Page 325. I, who had never been a soldier, this is Mandela, I, who had never been a soldier, who had never fought in a battle, who had never fired a gun at an enemy, had been given the task of starting an army. The name of the new organization was Umkhonto we Sizwe, Spear of the Nation, or MK for short. Okay. Page 333. I was joined at the farm by Raymond and Schlaba, who had journeyed up from Port Elizabeth, that's my Harry's hometown, the first ANC leader to be arrested in the Defiance Campaign. The Defiance Campaign was supposed to be a peaceful exercise, but ended up with a white nun being killed, hacked to death, and then her flesh eaten by the people who had killed her.
Ah.
The people were actually jailed for cannibalism. Very peaceful, I'll have you know.
Right.
It sounds like it.
You forgive us, please, for being so ironic in the way we look at things and sarcastic.
You have to.
You have to. You find the Russians are the same. All nations who have suffered go like this. It's a psychological defense mechanism.
Well, you can't actually have that kind of humor if you're not smart. So bottom line is it doesn't matter what your nationality is. If you can have that sort of humor and understand it, it means you're smart enough to know that you're joking and what you're joking about.
I'll work on that.
So for all the people who don't find it funny, you're all dummies. I guess that's basically what I was saying. Let's just be clear.
Yeah, how to win friends in a pacified age. Okay, page 336.
I'm drawing fire from you.
Yeah.
Here's Mandela, his own words, page 336 of his own book that everybody has and no one reads. If sabotage did not produce the results we wanted, we were prepared to move on to the next stage, guerrilla warfare and terrorism. Can I please repeat the word terrorism here? That's me, Harry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Page 337. Our recruits were ANC members who were active in the local branches. He's referring to the recruits for the military wing now. So what's with this thing about two separate organizations? It's all the same guys.
Right.
Yeah, they're all ANC.
Okay. And then page 337. Chief Luthuli had been awarded the Nobel Prize at a ceremony in Oslo. Just before the next step. So, yeah, I just want to rub in the fact that this is what the West does. These guys are planning a complete overthrow of a government, and back in Norway, they're giving this guy the Peace Prize, right? But that's the case that started the rot. And since then, it's just rotted more. Page 338. On the orders of the MK High Command, that means himself as appointed leader, in the early hours of 16 December, the day white South Africa used to celebrate as Dingaan's Day, and it's my damn birthday to boot, homemade bombs were exploded at electrical power stations, government offices in Johannesburg, Durban, and, as always, my hometown of Port Elizabeth, which was an ANC hotspot. Okay, so I'd like you to understand why it is Mandela went to jail. He went to jail because he and his friends plotted the overthrow of the state via invasion of foreign forces using some form of vessel landing, which could only have meant U-boat. And I know only one Communist Party with suitable U-boats at the time, and that would be the Soviet Union. Though they never said that on the paperwork. They were caught red-handed with the paperwork.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. And then he describes how he visits Botswana, Tanzania, which I referred to before, Ethiopia, Ghana. And then he went to Tunisia, where he solicited training and weapons, and training in weapons, and got it. Okay? And then he went back to Ethiopia for 6 months of military training. This is the hero that everybody's talking about.
Sounds peaceful to me.
What could go wrong?
Where's the confusion?
From Khartoum, I went to Dar es Salaam, where I greeted the first group of recruits who were headed for Ethiopia to train as soldiers. And so it keeps carrying on, you know. He says in 617, this is where it affects me directly. MK's first car bomb attack took place in May 1983. Actually, he's got that wrong. It was 20 May. And it was specifically timed to go off in the rush hour. He says, took place May 1983. 19 people were killed and more than 200 injured. Many of them maimed for life, by the way. Oh. And he writes, I knew that such accidents were the inevitable consequence of the decision to embark on a military struggle.
Accidents?
Yeah, so this, quote, accident being the timing of the bomb for the rush hour, no doubt. Now, I had quite a bit to do with and in that particular building. I have a friend here now in Vancouver who fell flat in an office across the road when her windows imploded. Okay? Our own building 10 kilometers away shook. We all knew instantly it was a bomb. It was mostly black people who were killed and injured. There were some ladies, some white ladies, and two Air Force officers who were killed. Hardly a military success, but it's certainly effective terrorism. Now, I got to ask you, man of peace?
Yeah, right.
You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, he's a role model. We got to take a break, but let's pick this right up on the other side. Because this kind of shows you who he really was and why he was in prison.
Yeah.
It's not a... It just wasn't publicized at the time he was released that, you know, it was all big mistakes. So let's pick
yes,
that up.
Because people still don't know these things. You can find all the archives for the shows and the previous shows with Harry Bouyans at wethepeopleradio.us, and we'll be right back.
We are back.
Okay, so we've got just slightly over 10 minutes.
Okay.
So we're going to leave it up to you because...
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So the last little bit about Mandela is, and I think this is important for you to hear. So along the way, his operation authorizes the bombing of my own mother's apartment building. And... A number of white ladies and white children are killed down in the supermarket where they place the bomb. His ANC that now runs the country has now named the street past the supermarket after the bomber. Do you understand that?
Wow.
That is what people live with in South Africa. The folks whose family died in that bomb, they now have to go and look at where their family die and see the street named after the guy who did it.
Wow.
Okay. Then, so, eventually, and it goes from outrage to outrage, when Mandela finally came to power, here's what he did. He appointed as police commissioner none other than the confessed and convicted planter of a bomb at Magoo's Bar in Durban that killed a number of people, ordinary civilians. Okay? So Mandela, his organization... The ANC appointed that man as police commissioner. If this is the man that inspired President Obama, why are you guys surprised?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, look at the people he hung out with. I mean, there were a lot of us who did some homework before he got into office and certainly did a great deal of homework before he was elected the second time. And he hung out with some really bad people.
Now I'm going.
I mean, he likes bombers too. You know, look at Bill Ayers.
Exactly.
Big thing for that guy.
And so, I want to now take you to a very strange place. I want to take you to the. At that point, it is the Danube, and we're on a riverboat. Finally, saved up enough money for me and my wife to go do this river cruise thing in Europe. You should do it once in your life, and then never again. Well, look, you know, I guess I hang in a general Republican direction, even though I'm not an American. But 2 weeks on one boat with an audience that is largely American Republicans can get to be too much.
Any time it's only one thing, it's not very fun. Yeah.
I'm going to tell you this. There was one lady on that boat. I think I've mentioned before that I could never get a single evening meal without somebody doing the following. I would sit down with my wife. The person on the other side would say, "So where are you folks from?" And we'd say, "Oh, Vancouver, Canada." And then there'd be a polite silence followed by, "You don't sound Canadian." And then we'd say, "That's because we were born in South Africa." And then there'd be another polite silence, and the next sentence would be, "What do you think of Obama?" That was it. That was a conversation. Every time. It got so bad that my wife asked me to go write down a little slip of paper to just give to people and tell them, "Please don't speak. Just read that book."
You didn't just start lying about where you came from.
You know, it's just we couldn't get food anymore without going through that ritual. But there was one person who broke the mold. And that was a lady, I won't mention her name, from Virginia, and she was what you guys would call a hog farmer, okay?
Okay.
And she'd obviously saved up for her trip on the boat, and she would find me every now and then. And on this one occasion, she plonked herself down right next to me, just after I'd been through this ritual for the how manyth time, and she said into my left ear, "I don't care where he was born. He's not American." Okay, now, she hadn't prefaced that with anything else, so I was left having to conclude she is referring to who was the guy that was then the president, namely Obama. Okay, so my life became just one walking tribulation of what do I think of Obama and how he's not American and. So I told a chap that was from, for heaven's sake, go up along the coast from Massachusetts for me, please.
You can go to Maine.
New Hampshire.
Vermont, yeah?
Yeah, New Hampshire. Vermont's not on the coast, ma'am.
No, I know. But if you go north, you're going to hit some of those.
New Hampshire. This gentleman, very nice gentleman, Democrat.
And Vermont's lovely.
There was one. So I walked down back to my stateroom. I couldn't take it anymore. At that point, I found him on the staircase, and I told him, "You know, I think your countrymen want to hang your president from the yardarm. And I don't really like the guy, but I feel like I have to defend him at this point." And so this gentleman said, "Harry, you do that and they'll string you up as well." That was the moment I kind of realized that Americans sensed any red-blooded, particularly American male, could feel something was off. Even if we were ignoring the facts and things, they sensed something just wasn't right about all of this. Well, they didn't have the background to know why their instincts were telling them this. I've just given you the background, okay? Trust your instincts, okay? This guy is all wrong for your country. He came with a calibration that is all Kenya and Mandela, South Africa, and he tried to turn your country into South Africa. If you don't see the parallels by now, then I have wasted four sessions on the air with you, because I have not managed to put across the reality yet.
Well, you know, the thing is, for somebody who would dispute all of this, just look at where race relations were in the United States before Obama was president, and look at where they were once he was out of office.
They weren't great before Obama.
It wasn't perfect, but that wasn't actually the goal.
I think it was going in the right direction, and when he took office, I truly believe they got so much worse.
They did get worse. They got infinitely worse. And it was some distance into his second term that I told anybody who would listen, watch how this is going to boil over as his guys, because he has guys, as his guys try to suck everything out of the system that they can before his clock is up. Okay, and that's exactly what they did.
Well, and it's the same, as you have handily pointed out, it's the same politics of division that you see in South Africa. It's the same mentality, it's the same thing. That it's not that we should all get along or that we should not, that you shouldn't discriminate against somebody or the other. It's, oh, yes, you should discriminate, but it's against non-blacks, I guess, whites specifically. And it's kind of the same thing. It's exactly the same thing that's going on in South Africa without, obviously, the farm murders and all that. But if you look at what's being said and what's being promoted by groups that Obama either started, likes, supports, same stuff.
Everything he touched, he Africanized. So it's important for you to understand that it's not communism in the sense that you understand Russia and China. This is African socialism, Africa style. Whatever he touched in the United States, he started turning it into the African equivalent with all that goes with it. Why are folks surprised at what the FBI has become? I don't understand why they're surprised.
Yeah.
It's part of the show. It's part of what happened here.
Well, there was so much more. He was so much more, I guess, there were so many more accomplices in his story, too, as far as the media. I mean, he had free run. And
but everything was shut down. No dissension was allowed. No, I mean, our freedoms of speech were basically suspended because it was all race politics, and so you couldn't say anything.
And what continent do you think that thing of shutting everything else down comes from? It's a little bit like, I forget now which Central African country it is, where the local radio station, government control, basically announced that their president is God with power over life and death, and it really doesn't matter what he does because he has total power, so shut up.
That's comforting.
Wow. Yeah,
as long as we're going to be fair about it, you know.
Yeah, at least we know where he stands, you know.
So all of this was packaged into language that Americans would understand, language that particularly more youthful Americans would understand, language that in particular his female white voting base would understand. Okay, and that is why it scared me so much when, you know, a white American lady stood in my own doorway, in my own house, and told me, "We're all in love with him." I'd seen that before. I saw white little young teenage girls faint when they touched Mandela's shit. And I saw the same with Obama, and I thought, oh, heaven help us all.
Yeah, yep, you know.
And that's where it went.
It did turn into be almost, kind of a...
And now those people are suffering withdrawal, and they're falling on their knees in the street and screaming their heads off on YouTube, etc., because they haven't known anything. I have some sympathy for them. You know, they were fifth graders when he became president, and they were leaving school
He
lost the job. They've never known anything else. They got 8 years of calibration of this garbage.
Yeah.
And it hasn't helped us any. Have to say. Well, yet another incredibly informative session with you.
Yeah.
Ran into a lady the other day real quickly, and she's from South Africa, and I think she was surprised and kind of happy that people here were actually talking about the actual issues down there.
Yeah,
she said people just don't know anything about it. You know what? We know that now.
Yep. Once again, a great show. Thank you very much for coming
again.
On.
We'll do this. We'll do this some more. We really appreciate your specific insight on this latest Obama thing. And please keep sending me things so I can post them.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Our guest has been Harry Bouyans, and got more for you if you can get on to WeThePeopleRadio.us. We've got other shows previous to that, and I hope you listen to all of them. It's really, really important that you understand the issues in South Africa. See you next week. We'll